Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown. I'm your host, as always, Simon. Welcome. Oh, I'm still one of my writers, in this case, Ilza. Thank you, Ilza. Has written me a script, The Mysterious Sphinx of Giza. What's mysterious about it? It's just, isn't that big cat thing in the desert? It's a cat, right? Or a lion or some shit? Look, it's okay. I have a tiny brain. That's why I have writers write things for me. And I just read them and learn something and then promptly forget it. But maybe you won't, dear listener or viewer, if you're on YouTube. Smash that like button. Resting on the Giza Plateau, with three majestic pyramids rising in the background, the Great Sphinx lies gazing east toward the rising sun, an eternal guardian as ancient as the desert that surrounds it. Probably not, though. Like, is it really as ancient? Surely the desert was there before they built the Sphinx. Like, you don't see, like, old pictures of, like, ancient Egyptian people building, like, the Sphinx in a lush jungle. It's always in the desert. It's been a part of the landscape for thousands of years, patiently watching empires rise and fall. It has withstood floods, earthquakes, industrialization, and multiple wars. Great men have come and gone and have long been forgotten, and the Great Sphinx saw it all. I only recently learned quite how close all of this shit is to, like, is it Cairo? Is Cairo the big city by the pyramids and stuff? They're, like, right next to the city. I kind of assumed that, you know, if you went to Egypt, I've never been, but you'd, like, fly into Cairo or whatever, you'd stay in your hotel, and then you'd have to join one of those packages where they take you out in a minibus to see, like, the pyramids and shit, and you'll be there for, like, 3 hours while they drive you out to the middle of the desert. It's like, fuck no, it's right there. When the Romans first arrived in Egypt, the Sphinx was already considered ancient, and visitors came from all over the Roman Empire to see this great statue sitting in the desert. Scholars since the time of Pliny the Elder have poked and prodded the Sphinx, trying to answer questions that the great lion has no use for. Yeah, it's a lion, okay. It's not a big cat. I mean, a lion is kind of a big cat. Or is that a tiger? I don't remember. I also don't care. Who made you? How old are you? Why does it matter? The Great Sphinx wonders. I just am. It doesn't wonder. It's a bit of rock. Doesn't wonder anything. It doesn't have patience. It's rock. Centuries passed, and today visitors come from across the globe to gaze on the ancient statue sitting quietly, unperturbed by the small creatures scurrying around, taking selfies and living their short, hurried lives. Yeah, you know, like, it's like when you hear about something like, what is that, like 3,000 years old or some shit like that, and you're like, it's a really long time. It's like, the older I get, the like less I feel things in the past were a really long time ago. Like, I'm like, okay, so I'm like 36. And then you're like, I was born in 1987. So like, the same difference between me now and the time before I was born is like basically end of World War II. And that doesn't make it seem that long ago, which is kind of nuts. Like when I was a kid, and that's like in the 90s or whatever, learning in school about like war, world wars and stuff, you're like, wow, that seems like a really long time ago. And now that it's even longer ago, it seems much less. Despite the best attempts of archaeologists, Egyptologists, and conspiracy theorists, oh yes, please, we actually know very little about the enigmatic guardian of the Giza Plateau. Whoever built it didn't think it necessary to leave any records explaining why they made it or what it was for. Wait, I thought this was like, wasn't this like same era as the pyramids? Shit, was I wrong about that? I thought they like built the pyramids and then they were like, yeah, let's build this lion thing next door. I could be completely wrong. I don't know. Perhaps the meaning was blatantly obvious back then, and it never occurred to them one day that their statue would become one of the most mysterious and possibly most photographed monuments on the Giza Plateau. I had no idea this was so mysterious. I genuinely thought this was like, yeah, it was built with the pyramids. And that's it. Okay. So, new mystery for me today. Something I didn't even realize was a mystery. Meet the Great Sphinx. For those of you who've never seen the Great Sphinx, though how you manage that is definitely worthy of a video on this channel, the Sphinx is a statue with the body of a recumbent lion and the head of a man wearing a raw headdress. Oh yeah, it is a dude, isn't it? Like, in my mind... don't know why I had it pictured as a cat, but it is a dude, and he's got a lion's body, which I thought was a cat's body. I did know it had a human face. It stands around 20 meters tall, that's 66 feet, and is around 72 meters, or 240 feet long, hence the name, the Great Sphinx, as opposed to the So-So Sphinx. Ba-da-boom, tsh! The statue was carved from a single solid limestone formation found by workers digging a horseshoe-shaped quarry, today known as the Sphinx Enclosure, in the Giza Plateau, and it is one of the largest and oldest monolithic statues in the world. The Sphinx is a creature from Greek mythology. However, Egyptian sphinxes probably predate the Greek sphinxes and are usually male. How do you know? Does the Great Sphinx have a cock? Is there, like, you look underneath it and there's just a great old lion cock on there? Or is there, like, what's... Do lions and lionesses have different bodies? Not really, right? The lion has the big mane, but a lioness just looks like a regular-ass lion, doesn't it? How do you know? Unlike the Greek sphinxes, the Egyptian sphinx is a fierce but benevolent guardian. We don't know what ancient Egyptians called the statue, as they definitely didn't call it a sphinx. The first name we have on record only appears in the 18th dynasty on the dream stele of Thutmose IV, long after the sphinx was built. The dream stele of Thutmose IV is a pink granite slab located between the sphinx's front paws and has been precisely dated to year 1, month 3 of the inundation. Day 19 of the reign in the New Kingdom, 18th century, 18th dynasty. What the fuck does that even mean? Okay, 1401 BCE. There you go. 3,500 years ago. Boom! Useless year 1, 3 inundation, day 19. No one cares. According to the stele, in around 1400 BCE, future pharaoh Thutmose IV, only a prince at the time, fell asleep in the shade of the big head in the desert while out hunting. In a dream, the Sphinx, calling itself Horemarket, or Horus of the Horizon, visited him. It was unhappy about being buried up to its neck in sand. Okay, so the whole body was underground, okay. I guess that's what happens when you carve at, like, because they carved it below sand level or whatever, because they said it was, like, this limestone rock, and they carved this big U around it and then dug it out. It's gonna get filled with sand if you don't constantly take that sand out. That's how, like, nature works. If the young prince was willing to help a statue out, the Sphinx would make sure that he became king. Well, he is prince, it's kind of on the cards. If they were like, oh yeah, peasant, you'll become king, he's like, please. Thutmose, wisely deciding to not ignore a statue calling itself Horus, a god associated with the sun, did as the Sphinx asked. The Sphinx kept its word, and Thutmose eventually became Pharaoh Thutmose IV. He was the prince, he was gonna do it anyway. And he just had a wild-ass dream, that's it. I feel like I have dreams, like, every night. Like, lately I'm just, like, dreaming a lot. I always dream about being in a plane crash for some reason. I mean, not always, but at least once a week. Why? Why? The Sphinx, I'm not even afraid of flying. I'm just always dreaming about plane crashes. Like, being on the plane that crashes, and then you somehow, like, you know, you're either dead or you survive the plane crash. Fascinating, Simon. No one cares about your dreams. They're literally only interested. You know when anyone ever tells you about their dreams, they're like, oh, you know what you dreamed about last night? And someone was like, oh, I had crazy dreams. And then they tell you the crazy dreams. You know, it's not that crazy, is it? It's only interesting to you because you just lived through it very, like, but, you know, you were there. The Sphinx isn't just lounging around the desert all by its lonesome self. It's part of Khafre's burial complex, consisting of Khafre's pyramid, temples, and everything else that a departing pharaoh would need. A smaller temple to the Sphinx, built by Amenhotep II during the New Kingdom, was later added to the complex. I didn't even know there was that. Surely, like, don't they usually build things bigger? They're, like, try to outdo their former kings and shit, rather than, like, I'm just gonna build a small one. I'm not compensating for everything. I've got a massive penis, said Khafre. A smaller temple to the Sphinx built by Amenhotep II during the New Kingdom was later added to the complex, and in front of the Dream Stele is a freestanding altar, all the remains of a small temple built by Ramesses II. However, it's possible that the Sphinx was never actually finished. In 1978, archaeologists found three stone blocks that appear to have been abandoned on their way to the Sphinx Temple. Well, it seems pretty done, doesn't it? I mean, other than the nose, but that just fell off at some point, didn't it? There's an urban legend that Napoleon shot it off, but that's just an urban legend. Or a myth, I guess. Urban legend would be a bit different. Segments of the bedrock on the northern edge of the Sphinx enclosure were only partially quarried, and the remains of a workman's luncheon toolkit, a container probably holding water or beer and some stone hammers, suggest that the workman just got up and left. Yeah, people used to just drink beer in the past when they were working, because it's, like, cleaner than water. I remember I went to a mine once. And it's like, it went underground, and you're going through all these mine shafts or whatever, and it'd be like, yeah, and this is where they all had lunch. And it's just like, and it's like, yeah, they'd drink beer. They'd just drink loads of beer all day. It's like, why? Well, they wanted to stay hydrated. Also, being a miner's really fucking miserable, so they liked being a little bit drunk. It's like, okay. It's kind of a vibe. Why the construction stopped so abruptly, we'll probably never know. Perhaps they had a problem with this particular pharaoh being resurrected and having a happy afterlife. the crowds can be so fickle. I don't think so. We don't actually know why the Sphinx was built. The body probably represents the power of a lion, while the head represents the wisdom of a king. Considering its size and location, resting on the Giza Plateau along with the raw pyramids of Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure of the Old Kingdom's 4th dynasty, about 2500 years ago, 2500 BC. There's like really specific dates, but it's not really important. As well as other burial chambers and a number of temples, the best guess at this point is that the Sphinx was probably a divine figure built to guard the necropolis. Others theorize that the Sphinx was a symbol of the sun god Ra, or more likely Ruti, a double lion god sitting at the entrance of the underworld guarding the horizon. All of this stuff about like Ra and Ruti and Sphinxes, most of what I know and like why I know what like the weird head with the headdress looks like is not because I'm like particularly interested in ancient Egypt. I'm not. I just watch an awful lot of Stargate SG-1, and they have all that like Goa'uld ancient Egyptian shit going on, which I rather enjoys. It was the biggest statue the ancient Egyptians had built, so we'd be fairly sure that whoever built it was making a very clear statement and had every intention of being remembered for a really long time. Yeah, that clear statement, they've got a small penis! Throughout the years, probably starting with Thutmose IV, many attempts at renovation have been made. The Romans, upon discovering the imposing statue, added a viewing platform that was later dismantled. Modern excavations and renovations started in the 1800s, and if you look at photos of the Sphinx today, you'll see a whole lot of loose blocks and masonry piled on top of the Sphinx. This wasn't part of the original design and was added over the centuries by people trying to protect what was left of the Sphinx, since it was eroding away rapidly. Just putting bricks on top. Why not like build a building over it or something useful? Today, the Sphinx is probably the destination appearing on most travel bucket lists, and for good reason. I'm more interested in going to see those pyramids. Those seem pretty cool, but they're not massively high up on my list. It's like, I think, like, I've been to see some of this ancient stuff. Like, I went to Angkor Wat, and everyone had built it up as this, like, oh my god, it's gonna blow your mind. It's the craziest shit you've ever seen. And then I went and I was like, yeah, some temples and shit. I mean, yes, they're big, and yes, they're very big. But it's like, all right, it's fine. It's fucking hot. That's why most of you are just walking around there sweating my balls off. I imagine Egypt's also quite hot. It's got a bit of a reputation. Interestingly, local Egyptians only call the statue the Sphinx when talking to tourists in Egyptian Arabic. The Sphinx is known as Abu Ahal, the Father of Terror. Holy shit, that's a better name. What are you going to see on holiday? The Father of Terror. I like that. Some extreme factions of Islam consider the Sphinx to be an idolatrous abomination and should be destroyed. For the sake of history, may they never control Egypt. Yeah, this is a bit much. It's like, I get, like, some religions, like, there's, like, two Christian religions, right? One's all pimped. It's the Catholics, right? Because the popes, or, like, not this pope, he's, like, a bit more chill. But, like, the previous popes are all, like, gold rings, they're pimping it out, there's loads of, like, idolatry and stuff. And then there's another, like, Christian group who are all, like, no, like, idols are, like, sinful or whatever. But they don't want to go and destroy all, I mean, maybe they did in the past. They wanted to go and destroy all the Catholic ones. But just chill, people. It's okay. Some people believe that. Like, who gives a shit? Who built the Great Sphinx? Ancient Egypt loved keeping records. They documented everything, with one exception. I hate keeping records. It's so useless. Sorry, I know we've had like 900 tangents today. But growing up, my parents, especially my dad, was the sort of person who's like, well, never throw that box away. You just bought a new television. You don't want to throw it away. What if it breaks and you need to send it back? And as I grew older, I was keeping boxes, and I'd keep boxes for everything, and they'd take up all this space. And then at some point, I was just like, you know, fuck it. I'm just going to start throwing everything away. I throw away all the boxes. I throw away all the receipts. I just don't give a shit. I'm just like, fuck all of this. It's just happening. I'll run the risk. I'll live a little dangerously. There's no mention of the Sphinx construction in any hieroglyphics or other records from ancient Egypt. Holy shit, I just assumed the ancient Egyptians built this shit with the pyramids. What? This is actually very odd considering the size and location of the Sphinx. It's clearly significant. Obviously, Thutmose IV didn't just dig into the dunes hoping to find the Sphinx because a dream told him so. Oh, why not? Wait, you can't learn about all this stuff from a dream? Thutmose, like other New Kingdom rulers, knew exactly what the Sphinx was, despite it being buried in the sand, so there must have been records of it somewhere. However, these records are sadly lost to us. And that means we can only theorize about who was the man, because in ancient Egypt, it probably was a man who was responsible for the Great Sphinx. According to Dr. Zahi Hawass, Egyptologist and former Minister of State for Antiquities Affairs, the style of the Sphinx is very particular to Egypt's Old Kingdom. The Old Kingdom began around 2600 BC and lasted about 500 years before ending due to all-time favorites, civil war, and famine. The face is broad, almost square, with a broad chin, and the Sphinx is wearing a royal headdress called anemones and might once have boasted the royal Uraeus cobra on its head. I know a little bit about this Old Kingdom stuff. A while ago, it's a good couple of years ago now, I thought it would be a great idea to develop a really big video, like hours long, that was just like the reality of ancient Egypt. Because, like, I don't know, you search on YouTube, and I swear to God, like, if you search, like, ancient Egypt, like, first page, you're gonna get to ancient aliens real quick. And I was just like, fuck that. And so I was like, maybe I could make a video just absolutely dominating, like, 3-4 hour video that just talks about ancient Egypt, just takes us through everything about how, you know, there's not really any mysteries. I mean, there are, but, like, we know how this was done, or even if we don't, it wasn't done by aliens. And so I learned all about this, but then I just wasn't really pleased with it in the end, so I never released it. And now it's, I don't even think I got through the edit. I was just like, eh. It just wasn't good enough. I'm sorry. That's completely irrelevant. No one cares. These are all characteristics typical to 4th Dynasty art and can be seen in the carvings of Khafre, Menkaure, and other pharaohs dated to the Old Kingdom. At one point, the Sphinx probably had a beard, and fragments of this beard were found lying between the front paws in the 19th century. However, based on how it broke, it was most likely a New Kingdom addition and not part of the original design. Today, these fragments can be found in the British Museum, where they belong, because where else would you go to look for ancient Egyptian artifacts as well? As the Cairo Museum, British Museum, fucking classic. God, what's that? I'm insanely dumb today. What's the word for, like, where you exaggerate and but you don't mean it? Facetious. I was being facetious. Most archaeologists believe that our Sphinx builder extraordinaire was none other than Pharaoh Khafre, a 4th dynasty ruler of the Old Kingdom. Khafre's father, Khufu, built the Great Pyramid at Giza, and Khafre built his pyramid next door, but his parent pyramid is 10 feet shorter than his dear old dad's. Oh no. Apparently, he decided to make up for this 10-foot discrepancy with a massive fuck-off Sphinx. The Great Sphinx and the Sphinx Temple, right in the front of it, is next to Khafre's Valley Temple and the lower part of the causeway leading to Khafre's mortuary temple and pyramid. In 1980, archaeologist Mark Lenner and geologist Tom Aigner compared rock samples taken from the limestone of the Sphinx Temple, and the Valley Temple. Limestone consists of mud, coral, and shells all compressed together over millions of years. Huh. Just found out what limestone was made of. There you go. So by identifying fossils within the limestone, the researchers found that the core blocks of the Valley Temple and the Sphinx Temple were quarried from the Sphinx enclosure. The plans for the Valley Temple and the Sphinx Temple are also very similar, and we know Khafre built the Valley Temple, so it's entirely plausible that the Sphinx and the Sphinx Temple were built at the same time as Khafre's Valley Temple, one big, happy construction. Whether the Sphinx was planned from the start, whether it was carved when the workers uncovered a large solid rock foundation formation when building the pyramid and temples, is something we'll never know, but based on other statues of Khafre, his stonemason certainly had the skills necessary to carve the Sphinx. The statue probably meant to show Khafre's power and influence, making sure that his name would live on, thus ensuring him a free ticket to the afterlife. Ah yes, of course, build massive statues, access the afterlife. Easy. I mean, not as easy as... Is it Catholicism again, where they're like, as long as you admit your sins, and it's not one of the, like, unforgivable sins, which is literally, like, as bad as, like, fucking killing the Pope or some shit, you can get into heaven. So you're just like, I'm sorry, Jesus. Please forgive me. Welcome to heaven. Done. And it's like, what did you need forgiven for? Oh, I murdered so many children. So Peter's like, come right on in, my good man. All is forgiven. And it's like, there's another dude, and he goes down. It's like, why are you going to tell? Oh, I stole something. But I got hit by a bus, so I didn't have a chance to apologize to Jesus. What nonsense. In fact, based on the position of the Sphinx and Khafre's pyramid, Mark Ledner theorized that the entire complex was supposed to be a cosmic engine of sorts, harnessing the power of the sun to resurrect the soul of the pharaoh, so guaranteeing eternal life. I mean, the thing is, fine, Mark Ledner can say, you know, he's not saying that this is actually reality. He's saying that's what people believed in the past, because people in the past, you know, they didn't have, you know, real science and shit. But nowadays, like, that's something you could definitely read, like, that, or you'd be read to, like, History Channel would have that. And it's like, a powerful engine for making sure that it can travel through the stars. And you're like, no, that's not, no, no, no! However, not everyone is sold on the Khafre theory. Some scholars feel the causeway leading to the Valley Temple was built at an angle because there was something in the way, that something being a very big sphinx. So, if the sphinx was already there when Khafre started building his complex, perhaps the sphinx was the work of his father, Khufu. What the link to Khufu is tenuous at best. We don't have any definitive proof that Khafre built the sphinx, so the Khufu angle is worth exploring. Khufu had a bit of a thing for lions and was associated with images of lions. Khufu was into bestiality, was he? I know that's not what it means by, like, had a thing for, but it can also mean that, can't it? This is a stupid joke, I apologize. Four terracotta statues of a lion goddess and two recumbent lions were recovered at Saqqara, and one of the lions had an inscription, King of Upper and Lower Egypt, Khufu. Khufu's Horus name also appeared on the back pillar of a standing statue, and at the feet of the statue was a small figurine of Khufu, so it's possible that the whole set of lion statues were commissioned for Khufu. Workgans working on Khufu's pyramid also left some graffiti behind at Khufu's port of Wadi El Jaf to show that they were there, much like people today carve their name on trees. However, the name they used to show that they were Khufu's men is a reference to a metaphorical king and lion mix. If this was how Khufu actually saw himself, a sphinx, the ultimate man and lion combo, certainly seems like something he would commission. I'm no specialist, but I looked at a lot of photos while writing this, and in my humble opinion, the sphinx looks more like Khufu than Khafre. Another theory suggests that the sphinx bears the likeness of Khufu, not because he built it, but because it was built in honor of him by his other son, Djedefra, who briefly... Djedefra, I don't know how to say that. Who briefly ruled before he died and Khafre took over. There is some speculation that he was helped along to the afterlife by Khafre, but that's just rumor. A small sphinx was found in Djedefra's Abu Rawash tomb, so it's possible that the idea and imagery of the sphinx originated with Djedefra. Like, well, we don't know. It's like it was one of these dudes around this time. Either it was built in honor of the dad, or it was the dad, or it was the son. Like, yeah, whatever. And it's like, okay, well, yeah. I mean, the son one is also going to look a bit like the statue because he's the son of the dad. It's going to be like, my son looks a little bit like me. I mean, he doesn't because he's not bald and stuff, but still. You know, stupid. In 1992, a team of archaeologists decided to think out of the box and hired a facial recognition expert, Detective Frank Domingo from the NYPD. That's a good idea. With 20 years of experience, the good detective was charged with determining once and for all whether the Sphinx had the face of Khafre or not. Detective Domingo and photographer Caroline Davies visited the Cairo Museum to photograph and measure the official, if somewhat controversial, statue of Khafre to get an idea of the proportions of the face. The theory was that if the Sphinx is indeed Khafre, then it should resemble the statue. However, experts have pointed out that the statue doesn't actually resemble other statues from the same time period, so there's some debate about whether this statue is actually an accurate depiction of Khafre. Why would they think it's Khafre? Did it have his name on it or something? Why would they think it's him if it doesn't look like him? And how do they know what he looks like? Can't they get his, like, mummified body and do that facial reconstruction thing they do? Like, I've seen it on CSI, so I don't know if it's real. But they get, like, a rotted face, and then they do this, like, reconstruction with, like, rubber or, like, putty. And then they make it. Can't we do that for this Khafre dude? While this is certainly an interesting idea, using a statue that many scholars consider a possible fake, I can see why, for comparison, when we have over 300 statues of Khafre recovered from the Valley Temple alone, seems to me like someone was looking for a very specific outcome and intentionally set up the study accordingly. That's just poor academia. It would be very interesting if the same study was done using a composite of Khafre's features from the 300 statues in the Valley Temple. The results might be very different. Okay, cool. Let's do that and also do the thing on his skull. On his, like, mummified body. Do we have his mummified body? I hope so. It's probably in the British Museum, isn't it? Of course, some believe that the Sphinx predates all these pharaohs and was built by someone else entirely. In 1858, archaeologist Auguste Mariette discovered the inventory steel near the Pyramid of Khufu. The steel lists 22 statues and the Temple of Isis at Giza, and apparently states that Khufu built a monument near the Sphinx, suggesting that the Sphinx already existed in Khufu's time. Conspiracy theorists love the inventory steel. However, the steel wasn't created during the reign of Khufu in the 4th dynasty, but during the 26th dynasty, which is a few years down the line. During this time, the Egyptians would often invoke the names of earlier kings, especially the great pyramid builders, to recall past glory. The inventory steel probably refers to Khufu in an attempt to make the statues at Temple of Isis appear older than they actually were. However, the Temple of Isis only dates to the Middle Kingdom, long after Khufu took up residence in his tomb, so I don't think the inventory steel is much help in figuring out who built the Sphinx. The Sphinx has been exposed to the elements for thousands of years. The features are so eroded by now, it's impossible to say for certain whose face we're looking at. On top of that, a lot of renovation has been done on the statue, and some pharaohs, we're looking at you, Ramesses, had a bad habit of defacing or recarving the statues of previous rulers so the face could have been changed more than once. What a dickhead. Ramesses is like, yeah, I'm so important that all of the previous king... It would be like King Charles going into like the National Portrait Gallery and painting his face over all the previous roles and being like, yeah, bitches, who's king now? Charlie, motherfuckers! So while our best guess is it's Khafre, this is one secret the Sphinx might keep to itself. How old is the Sphinx? To most of us, the answer to this is obvious. If the Sphinx was carved during the reign of Khafre, it's around 4,500 years old. However, many feel that the Sphinx is much older and had been carved in pre-dynastic Egypt. So, how old is the Sphinx really? Can't we just carbon date that thing? Like, it's made with limestone, right? So there's going to be, like, organic materials in there, like those seashells. Can't we just dig some of that out? And, like, is that how carbon dating works? You just need some organic matter? And you're just like, boom! That's how old it is. That's when it was made. In 1990, science fiction writer John Anthony West visited the Sphinx with his team, which included geologist Dr. Robert Schoch from Boston University. According to Schoch, during that first visit, he immediately realized the Sphinx was much older than 4,500 years. Based on the erosion he was seeing, the Sphinx survived intensely wet conditions with a whole lot of rainfall, not something you see a lot in the Sahara Desert these days. According to Schoch, other structures dated to the Old Kingdom show clear signs of wind erosion and sand blasting, which are very different from the marks seen on the Sphinx and the Sphinx enclosure, which is clearly water erosion caused by heavy rainfall and water runoff. However, the last Neolithic wet phase was around 7,000 to 10,000 years ago, so Schlock theorized that the Sphinx must be at least 7,000 years old. Can't it just be in a different position? Or like being worn down by something else? Or maybe it's just like, you know, Ramesses cutting its face off and putting a new face on. However, two scientists from Ukraine propose a much older Sphinx. Their research shows erosion patterns similar to those found on the coast. These patterns are formed by waves washing over layers of rock for thousands of years. Look, I don't know how far away the sea is from the Sphinx, but the sea moves real slow. So sure, over like 7,000 years is going to move a little bit. But don't you have to talk like much, much bigger figures to see any like real movement of land and sea? This suggests that the Sphinx might have been underwater at some point. No, I just don't think so. They theorize that the Sphinx could be as much as 800,000 years old. I don't think humans were like bopping around back then, suggesting it was carved back when the Mediterranean Sea extended all the way to the Giza Plateau. This would mean that the Sphinx was carved well before there was any human civilization around to carve it, which has some serious implications for the whole timeline of human civilization. Yeah, or we could just be like, look, all of the other evidence says that no one was around during this point. No, not possible. It somehow happened some other way. While the rock formation could easily be 800,000 years old and might have spent a considerable amount of time underwater, that doesn't mean the statue is 800,000 years old. The age of the rock has nothing to do with the age of the statue. Yes, agreed. Those who don't put any stock in this science business, have looked to the stars to prove the Sphinx is much older. Currently, we find ourselves in the age of Pisces. Before the age of Pisces, it was the age of Aries, the ram. And during this time, there's apparently a lot of ram-orientated iconography all over Egypt. Before that, it was the age of Taurus, which saw the rise of the bull cult in Minoan Crete. Before that was the age of Leo, the lion, which lasted from around 10,970 to 8,810 BCE. Proponents of this theory believed that the builders of the Sphinx were inspired by the constellations of Leo. Computer programs generating pictures of what the night sky would look like thousands of years ago apparently show the Sphinx if it was built 10,000 years ago and it was looking right at the constellation of Leo. However, I think the theory that the Sphinx is facing the direction of the rising sun makes more sense considering what we know about ancient Egyptian beliefs. Yeah, like, I don't know much about ancient Egypt, but I know they were really into the fucking sun god Ra. Like, that was their main ass god, right? There were like other gods and stuff, but Ra was the big daddy. While these theories are interesting, none of these experts are archaeologists. Yeah, we already threw out, like, they don't like science. So we shouldn't be listening to them, should we? The Rock, they're like, oh no, this was back in the age of Taurus. It's like, is that a scientifically recognized age? Or do you just look at an astrology thing and be like, yeah, those days. Was it our age of Aries? It's nonsense. It's all nonsense. The rock formation from which the Sphinx is carved can tell us a lot, but the statue is man-made, so artistic style influenced by human culture can't be ignored. Egypt is a well-excavated country, and its early civilization is well-documented. However, there's no evidence of an advanced civilization capable of carving a statue like the Sphinx in Egypt before the ancient Egyptians. Any civilization with that level of technology would leave something behind. Evidence of advanced civilizations predating ancient Egypt have shown up in other parts of the world, like Göbekli Tepe in southeastern Turkey. However, an advanced civilization in Turkey doesn't prove an advanced civilization in Egypt. Besides, stylistically, the statue is similar to other monuments from the Old Kingdom period. Why would a civilization 5,000 years before the Old Kingdom use the same artistic style? 5,000 years seems like a long time to go without any kind of progress or change. Yeah, look, this is nonsense. It's as old as the archaeologists say it is. It's like, even if it's not Khufu as the dude whose like face is on it or whatever, or Khafre or whoever the fuck, it's like, we know it was built around then. Like, that's pretty locked down, I think. However, Dr. Schock isn't wrong about the erosion. Weathered channels around 3 feet deep, clearly visible on the wall of the Sphinx enclosure behind the Sphinx, and he's correct, the Sahara was not always a desert. Around 8500 BC, the monsoon rains around the tropics decided to go north for a change of scenery. The desert became grasslands with fertile valleys, so people settled there in around 7000 BCE. This didn't last long, but climate change takes time. Around 3500 to 1500 BCE, the rains returned to the tropics, and not long after that, the desert was back in all its sandy glory. A study by geologist Judith Bunbury suggests that the climate change in Giza began early in the Old Kingdom period, with the desert back in full swing by the late Old Kingdom era. The wetter periods provided the Old Kingdom rulers with the resources they needed to feed the workforce building the pyramids and carving the Sphinx. However, once the dry period arrived, resources dwindled and the pharaoh's authority weakened, leading to civil war. Most geologists agree that the pattern of erosion is determined by characteristics of the rock being eroded, not the medium doing the eroding. Yeah, it's like, isn't that always how it is? Like, when you see rocks eroded, it's not like, unless it's like clearly a channel that rivers, that waters run down. And even then, it's like it will erode the softer stone first, and then the hard stone gets left behind. Doesn't take that big of a brain, does it? And one geologist pointed out Schock's claims that erosion caused by rain produces different patterns than erosion caused by wind, which isn't generally accepted by academia. It's not actually possible to tell whether the eroded limestone on the Sphinx is the result of water or wind. Other geologists have also pointed out that the channels could have been formed by underground water. Excavations of the Sphinx and the Sphinx enclosure exposed these channels, which would explain why the erosion is so much more pronounced on the back wall of the enclosure. Finally, whenever it rains, water runs downhill, so all the water runoff from the Giza Plateau would come spilling over the back walls of the Sphinx enclosure, deepening the channels observed by Schock. The limestone the Sphinx is carved from isn't the best quality, which might explain the extreme weathering. Since it's carved from the bedrock, it's also close to the water table, and the limestone is sucking up water like a sponge. Along with other environmental factors, the statue is rapidly eroding, and maintaining what's left of it is a full-time job. We don't need to invent ancient cultures to explain the Sphinx. Considering its rapid deterioration, if it was much older than 4,500 years, and if it hadn't been buried in the sand most of its life, there would be nothing left by now. Was the Sphinx always a Sphinx? Even the casual observer will notice that the proportions of the Sphinx are wrong. The head is much too small for the body. One theory, and even mainstream academics consider it a possibility, is that the Sphinx initially had a different head, which was recarved as ruling pharaohs put their own face on the Sphinx. Yeah, is that what was the dude? Like, who was repainting all the pictures? Like Prince Charles? King Charles, sorry, God save him. Ancient Egyptian craftsmen were highly skilled and had a lot of experience carving smaller lion statues, so it seems odd that they would get the proportions that wrong. This was a statue of great significance after all. The head also looked pretty good for something that's been exposed to the elements for over 4,000 years, while the body, despite being buried, has eroded quite badly. So if it wasn't initially a Sphinx, well, what was it? I'd guess a lion. Right? If it has the body of a lion, wouldn't it be not unreasonable to think they had a lion head originally, and then, like, some ruler was like, you know, it looks sick, my face on that. And then he sent his slaves out. He's like, carve my face into it, slaves. Writers Robert and Olivia Temple believed that the Sphinx was originally a statue of the jackal god Anubis, and built long before the reign of Khafre. The only thing I know about Anubis is he was the bad guy of like season one of Stargate SG-1. Anubis was the god of the dead and the god of embalming, as ancient gods had to multitask. So some argue that the Sphinx temple was actually where the pharaoh was embalmed. Wait, is there a temple inside it? I thought it was just a statue. With Anubis being associated with the death and the afterlife, he was a more likely figure to guard the necropolis than a sphinx. According to the temples, the statue was later recarved to depict a lion with the head of the pharaoh Amenhotep II, a ruler from the Middle Kingdom era. However, the Anubis theory has never been considered very seriously. With its long snout and tall ears, the head of a jackal would have been very unstable if the statue had been carved with the head in proportion to the body. There's also some indication Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. This isn't important. I don't need to correct myself, but I will. I think Anubis was a villain later in Stargate SG-1, and Apophis was the OG dude. The dude with the... Did he have blonde hair? I think so. He was scary. There's also some indication that the Sphinx was painted with a yellow body, a red, pale reddish face, and blue and red pigments for the headdress. While yellow would look a little odd for a jackal, it would certainly work for a lion. Besides, Anubis was usually painted black. On top of that, none of the writings that survive from ancient Egypt describe the Sphinx as Anubis. It's always described as a lion with the head of a king. So, if the Sphinx wasn't Anubis, which is completely a fair assumption because it doesn't seem there's actually any evidence for this, it just seems like someone made a guess. Perhaps it was initially a lion. Yes, yes, this is what I thought. In the early days of Egypt, lions still roamed the land, so ancient Egyptians would have been familiar with lions, which became a symbol of power. I'm not surprised, lions are pretty powerful. Like, I've seen video, you know, who hasn't watched those nature documentaries where it's like, and the zebras are feeding on the plains, and the lions lie in wait. And then it's just like, moments later, that lion's like, wachong! And he's destroying a zebra because he's so powerful, and the zebra's so weak. Stupid zebra. At some point in early dynastic times, a pharaoh came along and either decided to leave his mark on this powerful statue, or during one of the renovation attempts, perhaps the one carried out by Thutmose IV, the head was recarved because it had become so badly eroded that no one could figure out what it was supposed to be in the first place. So those doing the renovating recarved it based on their beliefs at the time. Independent researcher and artist Robert S. Nayland theorized that if the Great Sphinx, as we see it today, was recarved from the head of a lioness, everything that was sculpted later, like the headdress, beard, nose and breast lappets, would need to fit into the original head of a lioness. After all, we know that every part of the current head was carved from the same stone as the rest of the Sphinx. Nayland studied photos of lionesses and ancient Egyptian iconography found in temples depicting lions, as well as photos of the Great Sphinx, and even visited the Sphinx in person. Using clay, he first recreated the statue as it looks today with the smaller head. Once that was done, he sculpted the head of a lioness in proportion to the body of the Sphinx, sliced it in half and hollowed it out so that he could fit it over the existing head. Jesus Christ, okay. The biggest trick Nayland found was figuring out where the neck landed on the back of the Sphinx. On the actual Sphinx, there's a fairly defined hump and remnant of eroded rock. Based on this sculpture, he found that the shape and position of the hump is a good match for the spot where the lioness's neck probably landed on the back of the Sphinx. The hump is barely visible from the ground, but the rise is detailed in Leonard's topographic drawing of the Sphinx. There's also some precedent for lions being recarved into sphinxes. The Sphinx depicting what could have been Hetaferes II's sister wife, oh god, they were so incestuous, to Djedefra, found at Abu Rawash, clearly had ears that were hacked off, and the remnants of the mane of a lion that turned into the face of a person can still be seen. Nayland also has a theory to explain why there's no mention of the Sphinx construction in any records. Initially, the Sphinx was just a statue of a lioness, an extra symbol of power, but without any particular cultural or religious importance. It only became significant once it had the face of a pharaoh. Other than the head of Djedefra, no sphinxes wearing the Nemi's headrest predates the Great Sphinx, so the design of the Sphinx, a lion body and a human head with raw features, wasn't a well-known concept in Khafre's time. It only became a thing later on. However, the lion goddess, and recumbent lions are quite common in Egyptian iconography, dating all the way back to pre-dynastic times, so who knows, perhaps Khafre or even Khufu just wanted a nice big lion, which eventually became a sphinx. Lots of speculation here, isn't there? We just don't really know. I didn't realize we didn't know about this shit. I was just like, I just assumed that the Sphinx would figure it out, like the pyramids. We still haven't figured that out. Do we know how they built the pyramids? I feel like we kind of do now, right? Or it's like there's several theories and we just know one of them is going to be true. Because of course it is. What happened to the nose? We've all heard the story of Napoleon marching into Egypt with a bunch of bored soldiers and using the Sphinx for target practice and then destroying the nose with a cannonball. However, Napoleon only arrived into Egypt in 1798. Illustrations from Travels in Egypt and Nubia by Frederick Louis Norden, published in 1755, clearly show the Great Sphinx without its nose. Norden even made note of how impressive the statue was and his indignation at the disfigurement. This means that the nose was long gone by the time the French arrived. So we can blame the French for a lot of things, like making revolutions popular. Isn't that kind of a good thing? Like, revolutions generally move countries forward. Unless it's like a revolution where they install a terrible dictator. But I mean, because generally, it's better, right? No one likes a monarchy. But when it comes to the nose of the Sphinx, they're innocent. chisel marks on the face of the Sphinx, suggested the nose was pried off with chisels and rods sometime between the 3rd and 10th century CE. The nose was probably around a meter wide, but so far, nothing even slightly resembling the lost nose has ever been found. If so, if not the French, then who? Well, have you checked the British Museum? Not in the, like, on the floor, but, like, in the archives and stuff? They've probably got warehouses full of shit. Have you looked there? According to Al-Makrizi, a 15th century historian, a Sufi Muslim named Muhammad Saim al-Dar is the man to blame. Apparently in 1378, Saim al-Dar came across local peasants making offerings to the Sphinx, asking for a good harvest. Enraged by this idolatry worship, he defaced the Sphinx by destroying the nose. However, the Sphinx isn't the only ancient Egyptian statue without a nose. A lot of statues have broken or missing noses. For many years, it was assumed that this was just normal wear and tear. However, according to Edward Bleeberg, a curator of Brooklyn's Museum of Ancient Art Galleries, it's possible that the ancient Egyptian statues were destroyed deliberately by other ancient Egyptians. Hold on a second, sounds like you're covering for something, Edward. Have people looked in his warehouse for that Sphinx's nose? Maybe it's with Edward. Just joking, Edward, I love you. The belief in ancient Egypt was that the essence of a person or deity could inhabit any image or statue of said person or deity. By intentionally destroying the statue or image, you could diminish the person's power in the afterlife. The very precise chisel work and the fact that it would be a specific person or even just the name of a specific person that was targeted suggests that the Vandals were skilled laborers who could read and were probably on the payroll of someone in power. Of course, if we believe Disney, the Sphinx lost its nose because of some irresponsible carpet flying, and without any proof, it's as good a theory as any. No, it's not. I know it's a joke, but it's like, we can't just be like, all theories are equally silly. It's like, some are more reasonable. Like, I think the one that appeals to me most is the defacing one. I mean, statues get defaced all the time in the present day because we don't like the people who were famous in the past are like, well, it turns out, doesn't really vibe with our modern values, does it? Turns out now, though, we think that person's a bit of a piece of shit. Hidden chambers filled with treasure. Tales of secret tunnels and chambers filled with treasure hidden inside and beneath the Sphinx have been doing the rounds for years. The origin of these treasures run the gambit from reasonable, like grave goods in burial chambers, to the ridiculous Hall of Records built by the survivors of Atlantis. Apparently, the academic community knows about all of these wonderful treasures, but they're keeping it a secret! Though why they're doing this is a little unclear. Yeah, look, one thing about the academic community, they find some shit, they tell everyone about it because they're like, look what I found. They want to be first to publish. They want to get to press. They're like, look at these amazing things I found. Suck my dick, other archaeologists. Several attempts have been made to explore the Sphinx using non-invasive techniques to find any tunnels and chambers, as the Sphinx is in no condition to withstand extensive drilling. Studies by Florida State University, the Waseda University in Japan, and the Boston University have all found anomalies. Before anyone gets too excited, though, an anomaly isn't proof of a hidden room. It could just be natural faults in the rock or just a change in rock density. Old photos of the Sphinx show pretty deep fissures on the rock face, so there are probably more faults within the rock that we can't see. However, like most millennials, the poor lion is falling apart. So understandably, Egyptian archaeologists aren't willing to risk drilling or digging into the statue to satisfy the curiosity of conspiracy theorists. In 1991, John Anthony West and his team insisted that they found two rectangular chambers underneath the paws of the Sphinx, which might very well be the elusive Hall of Records. Look, if these dudes are like, yeah, no, it could be that, you're like, yeah, well, you're not really real then, really into like actual archaeology, are you? You're into like ancient aliens. That was the thing about Atlantis, right? West firmly believes that the Sphinx and the two temples in front of it, the Valley Temple, except to be the work of Khafre, and the Sphinx Temple, were all built around 10,000 to 15,000 years ago, the same time that Atlantis disappeared, according to Plato. Plato knew Atlantis wasn't real. The Egyptians didn't build the monuments on the Giza Plateau. They simply found and renovated them. To absolutely no one's surprise, they were kicked off the site for making ridiculous claims, and the followers of the Atlantis theory are quick to use this as proof that the team was onto something that the academic community doesn't want exposed. I think they were kicked off the site because claims like these will lead people to vandalize the Sphinx, as happened in 2010 when a couple of YouTubers were jailed for vandalizing the Sphinx in order to prove a theory of theirs. Don't do that. It's embarrassing. You're bringing a bad name to all of us. If you're watching as a podcast, this also goes out on YouTube. I'm a YouTuber. I wouldn't even describe myself as a podcast host, although I suppose I am. I always just say I'm a YouTuber. It's what I do. Atlantis wasn't real, but let's put this theory to rest. The Sphinx lies close to the rising water table, and in ancient times, when the Nile flooded quite regularly, the Sphinx stood with its paws in the water quite often. Any kind of chamber underneath the Sphinx would have been flooded, and any documents or artifacts would have been destroyed a long time ago. So, the Hall of Records doesn't exist. But what about the story of a chamber inside the Sphinx's head? There's obviously a hole with a little trapdoor on top of the Sphinx's head. Some of the New Kingdom steals, so after Thutmose had his dream, depict the Sphinx wearing what might be a crown. Wait, is there a little trapdoor on top of there? I assume that's a joke. Is it really? It's not clear whether this crown was part of the original design or if it was added later, and we don't know what happened to it. But the hole in the top of the head might have been used to anchor the crown to the head. Okay, so there's a little hole in there. The hole wasn't initially that deep, but people looking for burial chambers and lost treasure dug into the head, hoping to strike it rich. During subsequent renovations, the hole was filled in, but later it was cleared out again and fitted with a little door. Oh my god, so there is a little trapdoor on top of his head. Okay. All other passages in and around the Sphinx, and there are a few, archaeologists aren't hiding them, they're all dead ends. One passage going underneath the Sphinx might have been a burial chamber that was never finished, but the other passages were most likely dug by grave robbers looking for treasure, and unfortunately, they lead nowhere. In 2009, Lenner and Howarth drilled under the Sphinx to relieve the pressure of the rising water table in an attempt to slow damage to the statue. Cool. I like that. They decided to include the area under the left paw, where the seismic surveys revealed anomalies, to see if there was any kind of hidden chamber. There wasn't. The Sphinx was carved from a solid rock formation and not built from loose blocks, so instead of building a room into the statue in the way chambers were built into pyramids, any chambers or tunnels would have been carved into the Sphinx from the outside. The builders would then have used masonry to hide the entrances once the chambers were completed. Considering all the excavations and renovations happening since the time of Thutmose, if any chambers were carved into the Sphinx intentionally, they would have been found by now. Did the Sphinx have a companion? Sphinxes were usually guardians flanking the entrance to a temple or even a whole road, like the Avenue of Sphinxes at Karnak and Luxor. Some avenues would have been up to 100 Sphinxes just to make sure that the dead remained deeply undisturbed. However, Sphinxes are usually found in pairs, making the solitary Sphinx of Giza a bit of an oddity. So is there a second Sphinx still lying under the desert sands? One of the arguments in support of a much older Sphinx built by an advanced civilization that predates the ancient Egyptians is the fact that there doesn't seem to be any evolution of Sphinx building. The pyramids went through a clear process of development, starting as step pyramids with a few not-quite-pyramid-shaped pyramids, the Bent Pyramid comes to mind, all the way to the Great Pyramid of Giza. There are a few Sphinxes that might predate the Great Sphinx, but they are nowhere near the Great Sphinx in terms of size. Most mainstream archaeologists scoff at the idea of a second Sphinx. However, in my humble opinion, a second Sphinx, especially if it was the first and the Great Sphinx is actually the second, would solve the problem of the Sphinx building evolution. Do we need it, though? Isn't it possible that they've all just been destroyed because they weren't that awesome? Like, and the pyramids, though, that's different because they're fucking massive. Like, destroying that's going to be a job. But, like, not caring about an old Sphinx or intentionally destroying it is, like, way easier to do. The Sphinx was mostly covered in sand for large parts of its existence, and if a statue that size could be buried, it's entirely possible that more statues are buried under the dunes of Egypt. After all, it's not like we've had a chance to thoroughly excavate all of the Sahara. However, I also agree with the mainstream researchers that considering the size of the Great Sphinx, if there is, in fact, a second Sphinx buried on the Giza Plateau, we would have seen it by now as the Giza Plateau has been excavated quite thoroughly. Thus, if a second Sphinx ever existed, it probably eroded away or was destroyed a good long time ago. In 2007, Egyptologist Bassem El-Shammar published a study claiming that there were, in fact, two Sphinxes. El-Shammar believes that two Sphinxes are more in line with ancient Egyptian beliefs on duality. The pyramid texts recovered at Saqqara explain how the universe was created. Atum, the creator god in ancient Egypt, created his son Shu and daughter Tefnut, in the shape of a lion and a lioness, placing each other on the one extreme tip of the universe. Shu would take the solar disk and pass it to his sister, thus achieving the full cycle of the sun. So basically, there was a lion at either end of the sun's journey protecting it. Whenever the solar cult is mentioned in Egyptian writings, it's often accompanied by one lion and one lioness facing each other, posing parallel to each other, or sitting back to back. The dream steel of Thutmose clearly shows two sphinxes sitting back to back. Another archaeologist in favor of a second Sphinx is Michael Poe. According to Poe, there are two ancient Egyptian references dating from the Middle Kingdom that claim Khafre found the Sphinx and changed the face. The second reference refers to another Sphinx facing the Great Sphinx on the other side of the Nile, and apparently the two statues were built to represent the dividing line between northern and southern Egypt. A second Sphinx also shows up in the work of later writers. Unlike the Great Sphinx on the Great Plateau, this second Sphinx wasn't carved from a single rock, but was made out of mud brick and faced with stone. Around 1200, Cairo experienced a large earthquake, and people used stone from the Great Pyramids to rebuild the town and their homes. It would make sense that a second Sphinx would have received the same treatment, and a mud brick structure wouldn't survive long without its cover stones. The Nile also gradually moved east after 1166, away from the pyramids, and may have engulfed and finally destroyed what was left of a second Sphinx. To his credit, Poe, being an archaeologist, is the first to admit that this is just a theory, not a fact. Tales of a second Sphinx could simply be exaggerations. It's also possible that this second Sphinx existed, but had nothing to do with the Great Sphinx. It could simply have been a larger-than-usual Sphinx, and the last Sphinx standing in an avenue of Sphinxes guarding a temple that was lost when the Nile changed course. If Poe's theory is correct, there wouldn't be anything left of a second Sphinx, as the eastern bank of the Nile is part of the city these days. Any sign of a companion to our odd Sphinx out on the Giza Plateau would sadly be long gone. I think this is entirely reasonable. There's a lot of speculation in this episode about, yeah, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this. And it's all like, okay, well, maybe one of these will turn out to be true. Most of them seem quite reasonable. Some of them seem silly, like the Hall of Records Atlantis shit. But plenty of these are like real academics coming up with real ideas, and I like that. Conclusion. The Great Sphinx has been around for thousands of years, but it's unlikely to stand for 1,000 years more. The fact that it was buried is quite possibly the only reason it survived as long as it has. With the high levels of pollution in Cairo, the rising water table, the future of the Sphinx is a bit bleak. At this point, just maintaining what is left is a full-time job, and archaeologists, with the help of students, well, going to for extra credit, spend all their days patching the holes and fighting off the desert. Like the Great Pyramids, the Sphinx is a reminder that our ancestors were every bit as sophisticated as we are. Yeah, but they're not. Like, the Sphinx is impressive, but it's not. It is not even close to as impressive as this microphone or this iPad that I'm reading off. I mean, come on. They were perfectly capable of carving an impressive statue without the help of Atlantis or previously undiscovered ancient civilizations buried under the sands of Egypt. We don't know what the future holds for the solitary Sphinx, but perhaps it will outlast us all, holding its lonely vigil over the tombs and temples of the Giza necropolis, with only the dead for company. And that's where we end today's episode. Thanks for being here. Look, wherever you get this show, Spotify, Apple, leave us a rating or a review. Why not? If you're on YouTube, smash that like button, make sure you're subscribed, and I'll see you next time.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.